The best New Year's deals are happening now at Tanger Outlets. Celebrate with up to 70% off savings from Nike Factory Store, Coach, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. From activewear to accessories, beauty, and apparel, find everything you're looking for to kickstart the new year. The clock is ticking. Hurry into Tanger Outlets to save more. Hundreds of brands, unbeatable value. Plan your trip at Tanger.com.
What bothered you so much about the first half of it that instead of putting a grade, you would just write "see me" on the paper?
This is Sterling with like a matchbox.
Hello, Addison.
Billy, I am pumped about this episode because not only are you and I going to break down a Q&A from fans that have sent us in either from YouTube or the email, but we also have our very own Sterling Whitaker coming on, who's interviewed a lot of the cast, 1923, you know, Yellowstone, all of Taylor Sheridan's little adventures, if you will. And I'm just excited because we're going to be diving in. We're all going to individually give our grading of season 5 of Yellowstone.
I feel like we have three pretty unique perspectives.
I agree with that. You
know, I grew up in different parts of the country, different ages, different experiences. So like, you know, I think I have a general sense of where you're at, what your opinion's at, but Sterling, I know he's liked some things, not liked some others. It'll be interesting to hear what he has to say about. So this is going to be just season 5, right? We're focusing on like a season 5 grade.
Yes.
Okay. Including part 1, which was, I think George Bush was president when that aired.
Yeah, I was about to say, including part 1 that I did before we jumped in, like knowing that this was going to be today's episode, I literally had to Google, like, okay, can I have a brief synopsis? ChatGPT, help me out. What happened?
I did a little bit of a Wikipedia refresh myself. I'm not going to lie. Well,
before we get into the Q&A and our conversation with Sterling, we've got to start with some trivia, which I remember last episode I was unaware of what this answer was going to be.
It was a niche question, but like all of my trivia questions, a well-intended Google will get you to the right answer. It's just a matter of not if you're quick enough. Once again, this is for one of the Y Collection t-shirts at tasteofcountrystore.com. These are all inspired by the podcast here. There's one that says Better Call Rip. There's others that sort of refer to the train station. And first person to answer this question correctly gets one of those t-shirts. And this week the question was, during John Dutton's funeral scene, a song called Ashokan Farewell by Jay Unger and Molly Mason played. Obscure song, certainly not a number one hit. It was an instrumental. Where else did Yellowstone fans hear that song?
Where did they hear it, Billy?
Season 1, episode 1 of Yellowstone, Lee Dutton's funeral scene, same song was used. So it bookended the entire series there. The two important deaths, they went back to Jay Unger and Molly Mason's song. And I mean, it's a cool little funeral dirge that's a little bit out of pocket for some. I just thought that was a nice touch. And you know, someone like Taylor Sheridan and the music team had to do that intentionally.
You think, or did they accidentally, were they like, oh man, I like this song. It sounds so familiar. We should use it.
I like to think it was intentional. But
I do too, but it'd be funny if it wasn't.
Congratulations to longtime listener Hayden. Hayden knew it was played at Lee Dutton's funeral. In fact, there were quite a few correct answers on this one, which was a little bit surprising to me because I did think it was a little bit niche. But yeah, Hayden was first in this week. And Hayden, you get to pick out one of those t-shirts at tasteofcountrystore.com. The Y Collection, available now for everybody to go and purchase on their own.
And we don't have a trivia this week, right? Because we
Right, because after this week, we're going to take a little time off from the podcast and we'll come back to it, I think, sometime in January as we kind of start. Right. Maybe we'll do a Landman season recap. I think that's kind of what, in my mind, where we'll end up next. So that'll be mid-January.
Billy's like, I need a break from you, Addison. Let me go enjoy my Christmas in peace.
You know what I'm grateful for is, and I'm sure you recall, previous years, Yellowstone, 1923, 1883, all the shows have sort of reached their final seasons like during the Christmas, New Year's holiday. So I think there was a couple of times where we had to drop like Christmas Eve or New Year's Eve or Christmas Day podcasts. including one Christmas break where we had to crank out like 7 podcasts in 8 days or something crazy like that. I forget the reasons, but so I'm grateful that this show is done before Christmas. So now our Mondays are free and clear. We can enjoy the holidays and then come back. Thank you, Taylor.
Yes. Thank you, Taylor. Alrighty, Q and A. Here we go. The first one is from Terry, who says, I would give this episode an A, but here's what I wanted wrapped up that wasn't. I always thought that Rip was going to find out about the abortion and Beth's sterilization, and he would kill Jamie. It's such a huge secret between them.
It seems to be kind of open topic now. Like, she casually told Carter about it. And she had talked to some others about it, but we never saw her have that conversation with Rip, which I agree with Terry. I was a little bit surprised with that too. I thought eventually he would find out and have a moment to sort of digest this. I still thought Beth would kill Jamie, but I thought he would feel a little bit more motivated to help out knowing that.
I'm kind of wondering if this spinoff with Beth and Rip actually happens, that might be a plot point. Maybe not a whole plot point, but a scene.
100% could see that. I'd like to see that goes because that could be a really compelling storyline.
Okay, the next one is from Catherine, who says, you guys are so dumb. Bob, and if I mispronounce this, let me know. Also, that was in quotes. Quote, Bob Avila is just some guy. Good grief. Referring to our comment. I don't completely remember our conversation, if I'm being completely honest.
So at the end of the finale, they said it was in memory of Bob Avila. And Catherine wrote in and called us. She actually didn't use the word dumb. She used a word that's not really politically correct to say anymore. Nice. When we edited her. He was a very accomplished cowboy in rodeo. He's a Hall of Famer. Like, we didn't give him his flowers all the way when we said he was just some guy. My larger point was, he was a little niche to be tucked into the finale.
Right. No, he did. I did Google him after, and he won over 37 championship titles. And he's been inducted into the American Quarter Horse Hall of Fame in 2020. So no, big deal. Just kind of ran. I think the point to what you just said, it was just kind of a random add-in.
Maybe it's like not knowing who Peyton Manning is.
Also fair. Hey, I'm getting much more well-versed in, well, clearly not that well-versed, but I'm getting better at the whole cowboy rodeo world.
Yeah.
It's been fun.
Oh, you're ahead of me. You're ahead of me. No doubt about it. All right, Catherine, point taken. Apologize if we didn't give his flowers, but.
This one came from YouTube saying the music box is from 1883. Music box, or was it supposed to be jewelry box?
Well, it played music, but the same box. Do you remember a scene from 1883 that involved, because in the video, I kind of asked if anybody recognized that box that Beth's looking into right before the funeral scene. And there's a picture of Josh Lucas's John Dutton with Beth's mom. Mm-hmm. But I wondered, that just felt like something that had to have some significance.
I don't remember seeing a box like that in 1883, but my eyes were closed half the time because I couldn't take all the stabbings. So.
It's funny you bring up the stabbings because that was another popular theory. I shouldn't say popular theory. A couple of other people suggested that maybe the knife that Beth used to slay Jamie was Elsa's knife from 1883.
Oh, it was kept in the gun closet.
I don't know. I didn't look that closely. It's a good point. It's a good question, though. Worth looking into.
Next one is from Tori, who said, I actually got choked up watching Casey and Rainwater negotiate the worst land deal since Manhattan. The expressions of Monica and Mo as they realized the enormity of what was happening added so much to that scene. I remember how much anti-Monica sentiment there was in earlier seasons, and to see her role was heartwarming. I agree with Tori. And we've actually talked about this on previous episodes. I do really feel like we got more of a depth of Monica. I really enjoyed watching Casey and Monica's relationship just shed back another layer and just really be refined.
Her character really took the longest to kind of find her legs. Mm-hmm. And there was a lot of anti-Monica sentiment. You still sort of see that, but I think a lot of people maybe are just used to saying and taking shots at Monica. And if you look back at the season 4, season 5 character arc for her, there's a lot of growth, and she's become, I think, one of my favorites. Like, that family was certainly my favorite, but the relationship she had with Casey was, every time they're on screen, I wanted to watch because I knew it was like a good, satisfying moment of television that wasn't going to leave me up at night.
Mm-hmm. All righty. Do we have time for a few more?
I think so. Yeah, I think we got some time.
All righty. Johnny says, the only other thing I was hoping to see was more names in the graveyard. Kara, seeing Jake's name.
Brother.
You don't, what'd you say?
I said, my brother. Me too.
Oh.
Go on.
You don't even have to show the years they died. Tease 1923 this way. But nice callback and closure, in my opinion, to Elsa's ending narration.
So fun fact about Johnny, who we've referred to a couple times, he's from Canada, which I did not know. And he's referring to the graveyard. And you know me, every time there's a graveyard scene, I got my theater glasses on and I'm looking to see if I can see some more, fill out that family tree a little bit.
Pausing the TV.
We weren't able to glean anything additional. I think they showed Elsa's tombstone. They showed Lee's. They showed Evelyn's. Never did figure out who, what was it? Was it Ned? Ned Dutton? There was a Ned Dutton sighting early on in Yellowstone. Never figured out who that was, but. And I guess we probably won't ever see that graveyard again, right? Because now everybody's moving off that ranch. They're not going to come back around to it.
Okay. Ricky on YouTube says, I speak for a lot of people when I say they didn't have to take the barns and house down. They could have left them up as a memorial to the story out of respect to the Dutton family history. I think, I don't really feel a certain way. I feel like that was done via the graveyard.
I think if you look at it from the perspective of the Native Americans, you understand a little bit better why those structures had to come down.
Yeah.
That was stolen land in a lot of ways. And the promise was to make it, and Casey agreed to it, to make it clean and pristine and return it to how it was originally. It stung a little bit to see that Y falling, but I don't know that if you were on the other side of that coin, that was the right thing to do, I think. And they ultimately can make the decision. So I liked that it happened because, as we've discussed previously, like Taylor's always been really sensitive to Native American causes. He understood that that had to happen, even though it might have made people who were born in America afterwards a little uncomfortable or anxious.
Cass on YouTube says, rating 3. Complete letdown. Final episode was terrible. No tension, no wow factor. And if someone hit you in the head twice with a tire iron, you would really be able to get up and carry on? Surely it would have smashed his skull. You know, Cass, I haven't tried it, but you make a good point.
Yeah, the agreed on that last part, I guess. It was a softer finale, I think, than maybe I thought there would be. I thought it would be explosive, and it really wasn't. But at the end, I was good with it. So, like I said, there's been a real grab bag of scores and ratings and opinions. And I appreciate that she kind of explained why Cass, I assume is a girl, I'm not sure, explained why they gave a 3 and very valid reasons. It's just, I appreciated it for not having as much. And I think you did as well, right? I mean, you're never screaming for blood and guts and gore and tension.
Not to the degree. I have two younger brothers. Like, I'm used to watching action movies and all that. But there's a line that I toe of like, okay, this is a little graphic. My stomach can't take it.
Fair.
YouTube, another one from YouTube that says, I enjoyed seeing Billy Bob's in Fort Worth, but we didn't need to see Lainey's entire song. The last few minutes were the highlight with Elsa and Willie. Thanks. It's been fun. I agree. That scene, and don't get me wrong, I love Lainey Wilson, love that song. But I kept being like, okay, so Ryan, like, I just want to see them interact. You know what I mean?
I love Lainey Wilson. I don't really understand why Taylor Sheridan loves Lainey Wilson in sort of the same way. Like, he really went above and beyond to give her career a boost, included her songs, gave her a part. And he put her entire current radio single
the whole song
in the song to kind of give it a boost. Maybe it's not her current one, but it's from her most recent album, that's for dang sure, and then included her in there. So it was a little bit of overkill, I thought. Give me a verse and a chorus.
Yeah, just when it comes to pacing.
Yeah.
Just like at weddings where the father, daughter, or mother, son dance, when they choose to dance the whole song, it's like, it's just too long.
Right. No, you're right. Right. After a while, the whoever's master of ceremonies has to say, okay, now everybody join them.
Yes. Like keep things moving. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Alrighty. Two more, like I'm doing right now. I'm like, alrighty, moving on. Two more from Billy, not this current Billy Dukes. Is it from you and you added yourself? Billy's adding himself to the YouTube comments.
I'm not admitting it.
Okay, this one says, did we ever find out how John responded to Beth's suggestion that they take Jamie to the train station? No.
What? That is a great, great question. Stop and appreciate the question from a very handsome commenter.
Gosh, very, very long hair. Yeah. Well, Billy, what are your thoughts on Billy's question?
This was the one thing I wanted to know from season 5. And there was some more silly loose ends, but like John Dutton's final lines, his final scene beyond the laying dead on the bathroom floor was that scene from Beth from season 5, part 1, where Beth says, we should take him to the train station. What do you think? Right. And then the camera pulls back and we never hear his answer. So like, would John have endorsed what Beth did to Jamie? Like, I would have liked to have known the answer to that.
I think if he would have said yes, it probably would have been a little too dark.
But if Kevin Costner returned, I bet you we would have gotten an answer to that question.
But he didn't, so.
I know.
And this is my favorite one. It's the last one, and it came from our YouTube comments section saying, and by the way, I would like to preface for those who are just listening to this, this individual is talking specifically to Billy, not to me.
Yes.
Let me clear my throat for this. Are you in the bathroom or is that your shower curtain?
I'm not in the bathroom and that is not my shower curtain. So I have my backdrop. I mean, I think people have really kind of have some really nice backdrops that they've sort of created for themselves for this Riverside sort of Zoom situation. I have not spent a lot of money on my situation. Cost me about $150. And that is kind of a curtain. I'm not going to show you what's behind there. Maybe one day I will, but not today.
Billy, that's an expensive curtain that you have hanging back there. I'm questioning your choices. Your financial choices.
Someone told me that I should buy all because of their faux bookcases, bookcase curtains. And someone told me I should buy all the books on there and read them and make that a podcast.
Wait, that's funny.
Yeah, a little bit of a niche idea, but I appreciate you watching them. The video does offer a little bit of a different experience from what Addison and I do here, but we've started to include Q&A on that as well. And so far, people seem to like us, Addison.
Wow, I'm honored. Thank y'all. Thank you for liking us.
We'll see if they still like us after we give these reviews.
I feel pretty good about mine.
Okay.
I don't know if will like it, but I do feel good about mine personally.
We'll save it to the end. Save it to the end.
Should we bring Sterling in?
Yep.
New year, same great savings. All in the Kroger app. Get Kroger Spiral Sliced Ham for 89 cents a pound with your card and an additional $25 purchase limit too. Then get large avocados or mangoes for 99 cents each with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Joining us now to grade Yellowstone Season 5, Sterling Whitaker from Taste of Country. Sterling, how are you?
Doing great. How are you, man?
Good. You've been sort of our silent partner of this podcast all season long. I mean, it's been a really up and down season, as we've sort of talked about. And you've started to work on Landman now, which is a series we're flirting with a little bit. To you, does Landman lend itself to this kind of conversation that we have here?
I think it does. Yeah, I really think it does.
People are, I don't know, what do you think, Addison? People are kind of telling us to go for it, but not in so many numbers that we're all in on Landman. Well, maybe we'll start with a finale recap and see how that does.
Yeah, I feel like, and it might take, a whole nother season for people to really get on board, but I wouldn't say that this show has a cult following as quickly as Yellowstone did. Like, this might be a slow burn.
Agree. Yeah. And then of course, 1923, and then all the other spinoffs that we'll cover on this podcast feed for perpetuity. As long as we can get away with doing it, I think we'll all kind of gather and maybe grade each season like this.
Well, absolutely. And I want to note too that Sterling's had the chance to talk to a lot of the cast members of Landman, which is just really cool.
Yeah, I was really grateful to get to do that. Yeah.
You did a lot of the cast member interviews for Yellowstone as well. Does that taint how you feel, your opinion of the show?
How so?
I don't know. You get to know someone, you root for them, maybe you think better of them. You know, you've talked to...
Or worse.
Or worse, I guess.
I didn't come away with a negative impression of anybody. So, I don't think it colored my impression of the show. I guess I'm just disappointed that it came to an end in the way that it did, to a degree, you know?
Okay. Well, I guess we'll find out. Why don't we start right there? Grading Yellowstone Season 5. Sterling, you want to go first?
Sure. In terms of grading Yellowstone Season 5, I'm going to cheat a little bit and give two grades because there were two halves to the season, and I think they're very different, right? I give Season 5 Part 1 a D, and that's me being kind, because it really deserves an F, but I just don't have the heart to give it an F, you know? The first half of it is just not good. I can't find anything good about it, really, you know? The second half I'd give a B. So we finished off with kind of a B, you know, but, it just didn't, you know, it never connected with me the way other seasons have.
There wasn't any part about the first half that you thought was positive. I'll get to my review, I guess, but there was, what bothered you so much about the first half of it that instead of putting a grade, you would just write "see me" on the paper?
This is Sterling with like a matchbox. He just lights the match and goes,
poof. Yeah.
The first half, they started so many things and they didn't finish anything. You know what I mean? And that really, really bothered me. It's like, oh, we shot some wolves. Surely this will be doom for all. Oh, what? I don't remember that, you know? And so it just disappeared. And so many plot elements that they started, they just dropped and they just never referred to him again. And every bit of it was just, you could tell that they didn't know what to do because they didn't know where they were going to go. And so consequently, it was just very, very random and nothing connected, you know?
I guess I'm just so used to being disappointed in Taylor Sheridan's writing with Yellowstone of a lot of things that I think I'm going to have answers for. I just don't. And so as you're saying all this, I'm like, yeah, I don't disagree with you, but I think I'm just maybe numb to it that I'm like, moving on.
I could see that too. Yeah.
I mean, we've talked about this before, but every show has a certain amount of loose ends. It's just we look so closely at this show, but there were a lot of ones that was like, why did you even include Sarah Atwood has a fake name?
Right.
If that wasn't going to come, you put the gun in the drawer, that gun's got to go off. It's like theater 101, right?
Sure.
And there's a lot of guns still in the drawer across the Yellowstone set.
Absolutely. The white hat floating down the river that never even showed up on the actual show. I mean, what in the world are we doing here? You know,
was that, so the white hat really bothers you. Sterling was really irked. So this was from a trailer or a teaser. Yeah. What was that for season 5 though? Or was that for season?
It was the first trailer for season 5. And it said very dramatically, everybody will pay. And then like, who's everybody? Nobody paid. Nobody in a white hat paid anything because it never even showed, you know?
That's true.
Yeah, I guess our theories were maybe at the time there was a Malcolm Beck comeback. I guess if I'm to give an answer to what the white hat is, just sort of a symbol of sorts. Maybe we shouldn't looked at it. I mean, that's being kind, I think. But
absolutely.
Okay. So a D and a B, is that overall? Does that grade out to an average of a C for the full season for you?
I suppose it does, yeah.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. A solid C, a passing grade at least for Sterling. Addison, you're up.
Well, I'm on a very different spectrum. Now, I will say I put both of the seasons together kind of as a whole, and I gave it an A-. I felt like, in kind of actually hearing Sterling's takes, I'm realizing I think I gave it an A because it was less gore And I'm realizing I just don't think I like blood and guts. And so this one was a little bit more like walking through some daisies to a degree, like walking through daisies in a Yellowstone terminology. So I think that's probably why I liked it a little bit more. We saw a little bit more of the romance side with Rip and Beth, even just relational refinement of Casey and Monica, which I think I really enjoyed. Minus because I felt as if kind of to what Sterling said of, like I said, I'm kind of used to some plot holes and kind of numb to that, but really felt like the second part B, like they were kind of squeezing the amount of episodes that we got out of it. Where sometimes I'm like, man, I think that we really could have condensed this into three episodes and call it a day. But sure. Something that I really enjoyed out of the second or part B was one thing was Sarah Atwood's death. Didn't see it coming the way that it did. And just all how the Hitman storyline played out, I really enjoyed watching. I also felt like, although, you know, people have their hot take on Kevin Costner himself as a human and the way that he's gone about, you know, dealing with Yellowstone contract wise, I do really feel like they did a good job in part B of giving him justice, not him, John Dutton justice in the way that they played that out. And then my favorite, and Billy, you and I talked about this on the our last podcast episode, but I thought that they did such a great job of, although it wasn't this big, I think, you know, maybe some people wanted the result of what would happen to the Dutton Ranch to be filled with, you know, fights or, you know, some massive drama. Obviously, it wasn't that. It was actually rather peaceful. But I just thought they did a really, really good job of tying in 1883 and everything that was said then to just like coming full circle. And in so many ways, this show has so many plot holes. But this was one that I was like, okay, like we came full circle. And I just saw that they did that really, really well. A minus specifically on, I don't know how you would have done Jamie's death any different, but it just felt, mm-hmm. And I say, I don't know how you would do it any different in the sense of obviously Beth needed to be the one to kill him. And there's probably only going to be a certain level of like extreme that that's going to be done if she's doing it herself. But I think it was built up so much and then it kind of just
a little bit.
Sure. Yeah. And also a minus because sorry, Taylor Sheridan, if you happen to listen to our podcast, but that felt forced when he added himself into the show.
Absolutely. He's been doing that a lot more too. Yeah.
Yeah. And I could have done without that.
Yeah. Me too.
Okay. A C and an A minus. Mm-hmm. The plot holes didn't bother. See, here's what I kind of wonder is I'm looking at the comment sections of some of our videos, and I think over like 300 people responded within the first 24 hours of our last recap video. And like, there's just such a wide range of opinions. A lot of tens loving sort of like the romantic notion of how it all sort of tied together. And there's a lot of like ones and twos, people who are really upset with the holes. Hmm. And I wonder, like, if you were to do like a demographic breakdown of like those ratings, what conclusions if you'd come to, if there's like an age thing there, or if there's a gender thing there, like, you
could
know,
be.
People from the city, people from the country have different opinions on this show, but it is a, you know, there's a lot of A's and a lot of C's, I think, from the fan response.
Huh. I kind of wish, I mean, it would have been random for them to comment their age, location, but I am kind of curious.
Like, maybe it is age because your... I'm so much older than you guys. I'm like, I hate the way this show ended. Well,
no, see, I was thinking the opposite. I was thinking maybe gender. I'm stereotyping a little bit, but Addison being a woman, maybe a little softer, doesn't appreciate the gore that maybe we kind of grew up watching a little bit more. The show didn't have as many gruesome scenes, even though John Dutton's death was quick. Sarah Dutton's death was a blip in the eye. The Beth Jamie fight, that was ugly. You know, that was a big, ugly fight scene.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I'd say that was like the worst blood and guts.
Well, it's hard to remember back to the first half of season one.
You mean season five? I'm just talking season five.
The scene where Monica loses the baby and has the accident. I remember that being pretty pretty bloody and messy.
That was. You know, that was really emotional. But once again, it also it illustrates a little bit of what I think is not the same level of care as past seasons. Like, you remember how silly that buffalo looked? It didn't even look like a real. Like, what is this, a mechanical bull in the road or something? And it was so heavy-handed the way they foreshadowed that she, it's standing there, and then, you know, they're driving, and you know she's going to hit it, you know. It's
right.
It was so heavy-handed and corny.
It was almost, funny. Oh, go for it, Billy.
It almost had a look on his face like you'd see in a cartoon where the buffalo was like, woo! Or something like that. Like, that's how I remember it in my head. Like, I know that buffalo didn't have that expression, but it was a little cornpone kind of like that, even though it was devastating.
It was really bad. Yeah, it was really bad.
Kelsey Asbill, who plays, as we know, Monica Dutton, she joked when I got to interview her, she joked that she should have taken the bandages from that scene as her, like, what she took from set. Could have framed it.
All right, my turn, I guess. And I think last Monday we sort of gave our grades for the season finale, which Addison and I both gave a pretty high grade to. I mean, let me ask you this question first, Sterling. Like, how would you grade just the finale in a vacuum?
The finale I'd give probably an A-. It wrapped up about the only way that it could. You know, it was a little predictable and a little bit rote, but it...
Yeah.
Had to go some way, you know, and everybody's always going to second guess how a series finale goes because that's just the way it goes, you know.
We were in about the same spot. We thought the finale was good. And for me, the finale righted a lot of wrongs, but certainly not all the wrongs of season five. I'm really sensitive to the challenges that the show faced over the last couple of years. I mean, there was two strikes, all the Kevin Costner drama. I do think that this changing social political climate that we're in kind of matters and gives people a little bit more of an edge that kind of makes people a little more prone to criticism. So that's out there. Paramount in general, I mean, as a company, is kind of a hot mess right now.
Yeah.
And the streaming issues for Yellowstone. I mean, if you watched all these episodes, God bless you. I literally, this is how I watched the show this year. I would Monday morning, I'd wake up early and start watching. I downloaded on Amazon and watch like 6 a.m., 7 a.m. Yellowstone episodes so we could talk about it. Because I don't have Paramount Network, and it wasn't streaming on Paramount Plus, which I do have. I'm not going to sign up for YouTube TV just to get this one show. So, like, there was a lot of reasons to be critical of the show. At the end, though, I have to ignore all that. I think we have to judge just what appeared on the television screen. And from the start of the show, of season five, the show has been really, really uneven. I mean, there were some good things. I thought Monica's growth, I'll disagree with you a bit, Sterling, about the first half of season one. I thought Monica's growth through the first half of season one and into season two really rounded her into a character that you really kind of didn't just like, but loved. And she was that problematic at times before that.
Yeah.
Casey, I thought, really filled the shoes left behind by John Dutton. And I do think that was probably always the plan. And maybe it just got a little bit rushed because Kevin Costner left.
Sure.
So their family unit was really good to watch. The Beth and Jamie feud paid off. Like, it was predictable, but you got the ending. And you got some really strong moments throughout this season five of their feud, like Beth discovering Jamie has a son. I thought that was a good scene. Sarah Atwood, a very compelling character. Lover or hater? Yes, in many ways. But she was a great addition to the show. My God, there was just too many whiffs. The Wolves are certainly right up there. Sarah's real name. Summer Higgins' entire storyline. The funniest part. Poof.
Yeah.
And I almost wonder if this was written as like an insidery thing when Beth comes down the stairs and looks at Summer and goes, "Oh, F, I forgot you were here." Like, did Taylor Sheridan literally forget about Summer until that moment and go, "Oh, I forgot you were here. I got to deal with you too." And then they gave her a couple of scenes and sent her to the airport. I mean, he had to have been thinking all that because there was no reason for her. There was little reason for her initially. After John Dutton dies, there was certainly no reason for her.
Yeah.
And then there was just so much back scratching. I mean, these cameos. I mean, executive producer or director Stephen Kay, his girlfriend, Piper Perabo, his daughter who played Clara, the receptionist, they were both in the show. I don't know that you needed either of those characters. There was a whole scene about bitmaker Billy Clapper, and we never said it before, but that was really difficult to watch. I mean, that should not have made it.
There was no need.
It made him look bad.
Yeah, you just reminded me of another plot hole that never got resolved, or did I somehow miss this? Clara was supposed to go to the media or something because she's no longer bound by confidentiality.
Oh, that's right.
What the hell happened to that? Nothing, right?
Oh, I forgot.
I wondered if we were supposed to think that she was the one who leaked Jamie's stuff to the press an episode before the last. Mm. That was my only thought there, but you're right. It didn't pay off in a way that was obvious.
Yeah.
Which was fine. I mean, some of that real life cowboy stuff was super cool. It was kind of cool to integrate these characters, but we didn't need obscure references to Texas ranch cooks like Charlie Ferguson or something like it was in episode 13. Like, it was just so much back scratching. And then to top it all off, Taylor Sheridan's episode, which I can look the other way on episode 13. I mean, that was Taylor. He stole the show. If none of these other moments happened, but there was, then I can deal with that. But there's just too much of it this season. Mm-hmm. So even though I thought the finale was an A- and somewhere in there for the season, I got to give Yellowstone a C-. Okay. On a 1 to 10 scale, I'd say it was probably a 4. Taylor, he landed the plane, but the airbags were dropping down from the overhead compartment. Like, we were braced for a crash. Yeah, and he put it down, which I give him credit for, but wasn't pretty. It wasn't a pretty ride.
Yeah.
There you have it.
Sorry, Taylor.
So we decide on somewhere in the neighborhood of a C+, B-A- range. Is that kind of our aggregate?
Probably, yeah.
Probably C+, I guess, if you average all of ours together, or B-.
You could take 7 episodes and make an A-level season.
That's true.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like a good album, or like a mediocre album that has 18 songs, might have 7 or 8 that would have made a great album.
That's right.
Of the 14, there was probably 6 that were just like,
why are you here?
What are we doing?
staff@tasteofcountry.com is where you can leave your rating of season 5 of Yellowstone. Who do you agree with? Who do you disagree with? Me, Billy Sterling? Let us know.
Thanks, Sterling. Let's do it again during 1923.
Cool. I would love to.
Thanks, Sterling.
Thank you.
Y'all, thank you so much for being a part of season 5, the Dutton Rules podcast. We've enjoyed having you. Stick around, still subscribe, because more is to come as we jump into 1923, like Billy said. So we're not going anywhere. But if you need a nice little podcast to listen to on your drive to Grandma and Grandpa's house, you can re-listen to our whole season of season 5. And although we are closing, we have a fun little interview that's going to go on the end of this video and podcast. Billy, you recently got to talk to Michelle Randolph, who stars in Landman. Yeah. And
yeah, we talked Landman. We talked season 2 of 1923. She was delightful and talked a lot about working with some of those cast members. So I'm excited for everybody to hear that today.
Well, y'all, as always, the Dutton Rules Yellowstone podcast is another insightful, inviting, and exploratory Town Square Media podcast.
Exploratory, like surgery.
Just like surgery. Picking it apart.
Thanks, Addison. See ya. Hey, Michelle, how are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm doing just fine. Where are you hanging out at today?
I am in Huntington Beach right now.
Okay.
And there are blue skies, and it is not freezing cold. So a good December day.
You're in a really good spot. One show that is currently on is getting great reviews and is a ton of fun to watch. And then you got another one coming that critics already love, coming in a month or so. It's good to be Michelle Randolph right now.
It does feel good right now. It doesn't always, but I'm just happy to be a part of both of the shows.
Do you and Ellie Larder have as much fun as it seems like you guys do?
Yes, without a doubt. Oh my gosh. As soon as we met, within the first like 5 minutes of meeting, we both were like, I'm so excited to work with you. And we hung out offset, on set. I mean, she's the best. We bring out a side in each other. I don't know if it's Ainsley and Angela or Michelle and Allie. Like, there's something. Yeah.
Is it a friendship? I mean, I didn't look up the age differences to see, but is there like an advice giving sort of relationship where she's kind of a mentor of sorts, or is it just more like you're hanging out with one of your friends?
It's a mix. I mean, I respect her so much. I have admired her career. So to get a chance to work with someone who has a lot of experience, and she does give great advice, but also there's just like a natural friendship there, and we have a lot of fun together. And I think that just plays in scenes well too. It feels like we're not at work and we're shooting together.
Is there any sort of improv going on in any of those scenes?
Definitely.
is there any that have made sort of the final cut that maybe weren't scripted, just moments that you guys kind of worked out on your own?
I wasn't sure how much improv on a typical Taylor Sheridan show. I mean, on 1923, it's much harder to improv because you just don't really even go there. So on Landman, going into it, I assumed it would be similar. But Billy, Billy just would like randomly improv, and in order to respond, you have to. And I think everyone kind of got used to that dynamic. And there were definitely moments of improv, I'd say at the start of scenes, the end of scenes. So definitely things have made it in there.
I mean, Taylor does a lot of things well, but writing a 17-year-old girl might be a little bit of a blind spot for him at this point in his life, because I don't think he has kids. Where have you kind of taken ownership of that character, or some of the lines, or anything specifically you can kind of think of that you're like, oh, I can add this because it wasn't in the script?
Yeah. You know, Ainsley is written as this very impulsive, unfiltered 17-year-old. She's a wild child. And it was really important for me when I got the script to find any moment of humanity in her, and just trying to find ways to humanize her. Because there isn't always a lot of context for her scenes. And right. So I worked really hard. It really challenged me in a lot of ways. But I think when we get to see Ainsley with her parents, and we kind of see this like other side of her personality when she turns into the daughter, and then we get to see her with her friends, and I take a lot of ownership of Ainsley. Obviously, I only have so much to work with, but I really tried to develop her as much as I possibly could.
Well, I feel like that's the key, like for you and for Angela both, because if there's not that sort of depth, then, you know, it's not a full-fledged character. It would be hard to kind of watch on sort of repeat, but that you've done that, it makes it two really, I mean, every time you guys are on screen, it sort of lights up the screen.
Thank you. I think we both knew, I read the scripts too. So I had my first impressions of them. And then I got to sit with the character for like almost a year before we started filming. And so I worked so hard with, just playing a character that's 17. And I did movement coaching. I did dialect coaching. I worked with an acting coach. And so I just tried to make the most of what I could.
What was Michelle Randolph like at age 17?
Nothing like Ainsley. I was so opposite of her. Oh my gosh. I'm an overthinker. I'm very filtered. She brought out a side of my personality that had been tucked deeply away. And I think I've like taken little pieces of her with me, and I'm happy about it.
Working with Billy Bob Thornton, I'm sure you had seen a lot of his movies or some of his time on television previously. And there's some dialogue exchanges that I would say are pretty, I'm not sure the right word. You guys have some sex talks that maybe most mothers and or most daughters and fathers don't have in some pretty candid ways. Was that awkward to film with him? Was it just two professionals doing what they do? Like, how did you guys kind of sort that out and sort of bounce that stuff off each other?
Billy is so wonderful. The second I met him, I mean, he just has this calming presence, and it never felt awkward or uncomfortable to film scenes with him. Like, it was just, he really ended up feeling like a father figure in a lot of ways for me. And those are difficult conversations to have and kind of uncomfortable to watch, but they're so like authentic to who Ainsley is and who Tommy is, that it just felt natural.
I remember, I think I watched the first couple episodes. My parents were in town for the holidays, and I'm 45, and I still get awkward when things like that come up on television in front of my mom. I can hardly imagine.
Well, it's different. I couldn't have that conversation, but it wasn't me having that conversation. Ainsley having it's different. I could talk about,
very fair different. Enough. It's interesting talking to you today because the season finale of Yellowstone was last night, and that was so much about Beth and Jamie and their sibling rivalryhood, and you have a brother in this show who you don't get along with. Do we find out the origin story of sort of your hatred for one another?
I'm not sure how much of it is if there's an origin story or they're just two, as you know, such different people that they do not understand each other. I don't think she understands why everything is so, she thinks he's negative. He thinks she's oblivious. Like, it's just, there's a miscommunication between the two of them.
Your character in 1923, I mean, she was about a similar age, sort of a naivety to that character as well. Are there any other similarities between the two, or could you take anything from Elizabeth and bring her to Ainsley?
They're so different, but yes, I mean, they're both young women who are kind of finding their place in the world and discovering what their opinions are and their viewpoints. And so I think just, I, as Michelle, I'm a very like opinionated person. And so I think going into those characters, there was like an openness that I had to have for both of them.
This seems like kind of an obvious question, but I'll ask anyway, which show is more fun to film?
I actually couldn't choose between the two. They're so different. And there's something about being in Montana that's just so special. And I love who I get to work with. But then Texas, I mean, it doesn't feel like work. So they're equally special to me.
I don't know. I mean, winter, snow, horses, Montana prairie versus the weather, country clubs.
I would take Texas weather over a winter in Montana. But I just had great time. I had such a great experience on both shows. I will say though, like this last season for 1923, I shot and it was miserably cold multiple days on set. And I did not like that.
What can you tell me? I mean, all we have so far about season two is the trailer. What can you tell me about your character's journey on 1923 and where Elizabeth's headed?
You know, Elizabeth gets to really come into her own this season. And I think we get to see a different side of her. And I was excited to do that because it challenged me as an actor. And I think that's all you can ask for, like for a season two.
If I recall the end of season one, she had just lost a baby, but I can't remember what happened after that with her.
That was the ending of her season one. Yeah. Is the miscarriage. Okay. So.
All right. So we're coming out of that.
Yes.
Do you know if you're an heir to Kevin Costner's John Dutton yet? Do you know the answer to that? I won't ask you to spill it, but do you know?
I have an idea.
You have an idea. I don't know what to do with that, Michelle.
That's a question everyone asks me. And I'm like, that's what people ask me in person sometimes. I'm like, you think I'm going to tell you in person? Like,
no.
I'm still drawing the family trees too.
Yeah, I get deep into the genealogy. It's a little bit of a bad habit of mine. But has it been tough 2 years between season one and season two? Was that a real challenge to kind of wait, or were you busy enough that it didn't seem like that long?
No, I wasn't sure how it was going to be. I'd never done that before. And it was so much easier than I thought it would be coming into a season two, because I think when you the production does such a great job. I mean, the costumes are so authentic. The sets are, I got next to Helen Mirren and I'm like, oh, yep, this is how it's back. We're falling right into it. So I found it easy to fall back in.
Well, I'm excited to watch it on 2 months, I guess. And I look forward to seeing you. Oh,
that is 2 months away.
Just 2 months, a little over. I know, a little longer. Thank you. I hope you have a great holiday, and thank you very much for the time.
Thank you so much.
Today.